Chapter 137. Questions. While the mayor of Levenshire seemed to approve of how I'd handled the false troopers, I knew matters weren't as simple as that. According to the Iron Law, I was guilty of at least 3 egregious crimes, any one of which would be enough to see me hanged. Unfortunately, everyone in Levenshire knew my name and description, and I worried the story might run ahead of me on the road. If that happened, I could easily come to a town where the local constables would do their duty and lock me up until a traveling magistrate arrived to judge my case. So I made my best speed towards Severn. I put in 2 days of hard walking, then paid for a seat on a coach heading south. Rumor travels fast, but you can keep ahead of it if you're willing to ride hard and lose a little sleep. After 3 days of bone-jarring ride, I arrived in Severn. The coach entered the city by the eastern gate, and for the first time, I saw the gibbet Braden had told me about. The sight of the bleached bones in the iron cage did not ease my anxieties. The mayor had put a man in there for simple banditry. What might he do to someone who had slaughtered 9 traveling players on the road? I was sorely tempted to head straight to the 4 Tapers, where I hoped to find Denna, despite what the Cathay had said. But I was covered in several days of grime and sweat. I needed a bath and a brush before I spoke with anyone. As soon as I was inside the mayor's estate, I sent a ring and note to Stapes, knowing it would be the quickest way to get in touch with the mayor for a private conversation. I made it back to my room with little delay, though it meant brushing roughly past a few courtiers in the halls. I had just set down my travel sack and sent runners for hot water when Stapes appeared in the doorway.
"Young Master Quoth," he beamed, grabbing my hand to shake it. "It's good to have you back. Lord and lady, but I've been worried about you."
His enthusiasm wrung a tired smile from me. "It's good to be back, Stapes. Have I missed much?"
"Much?" he laughed. "The wedding, for one."
"Wedding?" I asked, but I knew the answer as soon as I said it. "The mayor's wedding?" Stapes nodded excitedly.
"Oh, it was a grand thing. It's a shame you had to be gone for it, considering."
He gave a knowing look, but didn't say anything else. Stapes was always very discreet. "They didn't waste much time, did they?"
"It's been 2 months since the betrothal," Stapes said with a hint of reproach. "Not a bit less than proper."
I saw him relax a bit, and he gave me a wink.
"Which isn't to say they weren't both a bit eager."
I chuckled as runner boys came through the open door with buckets of steaming water. The splashing as they began to fill the bath was like sweet music. The manservant watched them leave, then leaned close and said in a quieter voice,
"You'll be glad to hear our other unresolved matter has been tended to properly."
I looked at him blankly, searching through my memory for what he might be referring to. So much had happened since I had left. Stapes saw my expression.
"Codicus," he said,
his mouth twisting bitterly around the name.
"Dagon brought him back only 2 days after you left. He'd gone to ground not 10 miles from the city."
"So close?" I asked, surprised. Stapes nodded grimly.
"He was tucked away in a farmhouse like a badger in a burrow. He killed 4 of the mayor's personal guard and cost Dagon an eye. In the end, they only caught him by setting fire to the place."
"And what happened then?" I asked. "Not a trial, certainly."
"The matter was tended to," Stapes repeated. "Properly."
He said the last with a great weight of grim finality. His normally kind eyes were narrow with hate. In that moment, the round-faced little man looked very little like a grocer at all. I remembered Alvaron calmly saying, "Take off his thumbs." Given what I knew of Alvaron's swift and decisive anger, I doubted anyone would ever see Caudicus again. Did the mayor manage to uncover why? Even though I spoke softly, I left the rest unsaid, knowing Stapes would not approve of my mentioning the poisoning openly.
"It's not my place to say," Stapes said carefully.
His tone was slightly offended, as if I should know better than to ask him such things. I let the subject go, knowing that I wouldn't be able to get anything else out of Stapes. "You'd be doing me a favor if you could deliver something to the mayor for me," I said, walking to where I dropped my worn travel sack. I rooted through it until I found the mayor's lockbox down near the bottom. I held it out to Stapes. "I'm not sure what's in it," I said, "but it's got his crest on the top, and it's heavy. I hope it might be some of the taxes that were stolen." I smiled. "Tell him it's a wedding present." Stapes took hold of the box, smiling. "I'm sure he'll be delighted." Three more runners appeared, but only two of them ran past with steaming buckets. The third went to Stapes and handed him a note. There was more splashing in the other room, and all three of the boys left again, stealing glances at me. Stapes skimmed the note, then looked up at me. "The mayor is hoping it would be convenient for you to meet him in the garden at Fifth Bell," he said. The garden meant polite conversation. If the mayor had wanted a serious discussion, he would have summoned me to his rooms, or paid me a call through the secret passage that connected his rooms with mine. I looked at the clock on the wall. It wasn't a sympathy clock of the sort I was used to at the university. This was a harmony clock, swinging pendulum and all. Beautiful machinery, but not nearly as accurate. Its hands showed a quarter to the hour. "Is that clock fast, Stapes?" I asked hopefully. 15 minutes was barely enough time for me to strip out of my road clothes and lace myself into some sufficiently decorous court finery. But given the layers of dirt and sour sweat that covered me, that would be as pointless as tying a silk ribbon around a steaming cow pat. Stapes looked over my shoulder, then checked a small gear watch he kept in his pocket. "It looks about 5 minutes slow, actually." I rubbed my face, considering my options. I wasn't simply mussed from a day's travel. I was filthy. I had walked hard under the summer sun, then spent days trapped in a stifling hot carriage. While the mayor was not one to judge things entirely by appearances, he did value propriety. I would not make a good impression if I showed up reeking and filthy. Unbidden, the memory of the iron gibbet rose up in my mind, and I decided I couldn't risk making a bad impression. Not with the news I brought. "Stapes, I won't be ready for at least an hour. I could meet with him at Sixth Bell if he would like." Stapes's expression turned stiff and affronted. Its message was clear. "You simply didn't request a different meeting time with the Mayor Alvaron. He asked. You came. That was the way of things." "Stapes," I said as gently as I could, "look at me. Smell me. I've come 300 miles in the last span of days. I'm not going to go strolling in the garden covered in road dust and reeking like a barbarian." Stapes's mouth firmed into a frown. "I'll tell him you're otherwise occupied." More steaming buckets arrived. "Tell him the truth, Stapes," I said as I began to unbutton my shirt. "I'm sure he'll understand." After I was scrubbed, brushed, and properly dressed, I sent the mayor my golden ring and a card that said, "Private conversation at your earliest convenience." Within an hour, a runner returned with a card from the mayor saying, "Await my summons." I waited. I sent a runner to fetch dinner, then waited the rest of the evening. The following day passed without any further message, and because I didn't know when Alvaron's summons might come, I was effectively trapped in my rooms again, waiting for his ring. It was nice to have time to catch up on my sleep and have a second bath, but I was worried about the news from Levenshire catching up with me. The fact that I couldn't make my way down to Severin Low to look for Denna was a vast irritation as well. It was the sort of silent rebuke all too common in courtly settings. The mayor's message was clear. "When I call, you come. My terms, or not at all." It was childish in the way only the nobility can be. Still, there was nothing to be done. So I sent my silver ring to Braden. He arrived in time to share supper with me and caught me up on the season's worth of gossip I'd missed. Court rumor can be terribly insipid stuff, but Braden skimmed the cream off the top for me. Most of it centered around the mayor's whirlwind courtship and marriage to the lackless heir. They were besotted with each other, apparently. Many suspected a child might already be on the way. The royal court in Rhaenyra was busy, too. The prince regent Aletus had been killed in a duel, sending much of the southern feral into chaos as various nobility did their best to capitalize on the death of such a highly ranked member of the court. There were rumors, too. The mayor's men had taken care of some bandits off in a remote piece of the Eld. They'd been waylaying tax collectors, apparently. There was grumbling in the north, where folk had to suffer a second visit from the mayor's collectors. But at least the roads were clear again, and those responsible were dead. Braden also mentioned an interesting rumor of a young man who had gone to visit Felurian and come back more or less intact, though slightly fey around the edges. It wasn't a court rumor, exactly. More the sort of thing you heard in a tap room. A low sort of rumor no highborn person would ever deign to lend an ear to. His dark, owlish eyes glittered merrily as he spoke. I agreed that such stories were indeed quite low and beneath the notice of fine persons such as ourselves. My cloak? It was rather fine, was it not? I couldn't remember where exactly I'd had it tailored. Somewhere exotic. By the way, I'd heard quite an interesting song the other day on the subject of Felurian. Would he like to hear it? We also played tack, of course. Despite the fact that I had spent a long time away from the board, Braden said my playing was much improved. It seemed I was learning how to play a beautiful game. Needless to say, when Alvaron sent his next summons, I came. I was tempted to arrive a few minutes late, but I resisted, knowing no good could come of it. The mayor was walking about on his own when I met him in the garden. He stood straight and tall, looking for all the world as if he'd never needed to lean on my arm or use a walking stick.
"Quoth," he smiled warmly. "I'm glad you could find time to visit me."
"Always my pleasure, Your Grace."
"Shall we walk?" he asked.
"The view is pleasant from the South Bridge this time of day." I fell into step beside him, and we began to wind our way among the carefully tended hedges.
"I could not help but notice that you are armed," he remarked, disapproval heavy on his voice.
My hand went unconsciously to Sasura. It was at my hip now, rather than over my shoulder.
"Is there aught amiss with that, Your Grace? I have understood that all men keep the right to girt themselves in Ventus." "It is hardly proper," he stressed the word.
"I understand that in the King's Court in Rhaenyra there's not a gentleman would dare be seen without a sword."
"Well spoken as you are no gentleman,"
Alvaron pointed out coolly. "As you would do well to remember." I said nothing. "Besides, it is a barbarian custom, and one that will bring the king to grief in time. No matter what the custom in Rhaenyra, in my city, my house, and my garden, you will not come before me armed." He turned to look at me with hard eyes. "I apologize if I have given any offense, Your Grace." I stopped and offered him a more earnest bow than the one I'd given before. My show of submission seemed to appease him. He smiled and laid a hand on my shoulder.
"There's no need for all that.
Come, look at the morning fire. The leaves will be turning soon." We walked for a piece of an hour, chatting amiably about small nothings. I was unfailingly polite, and Alvaron's mood continued to improve. If catering to his ego kept me in his good graces, it was a small price to pay for his patronage. "I must say that marriage suits Your Grace."
"Thank you," he nodded graciously. "I have found it much to my liking."
"And your health continues well?" I asked, pressing the boundaries of public conversation.
"Exceeding well," he said.
"Another benefit of married life, no doubt." He gave me a look that told me he would not appreciate further inquiry, at least not in so public a place as this. We continued our walk, nodding to the nobles we passed. The mayor chatted on about trivialities, rumors in the court. I played along, filling my part in the conversation. But the truth was, I needed to have done with this so we could have an earnest conversation in private. But I also knew Alvaron could not be rushed into a discussion. Our talks had a ritual pattern. If I violated that, I would do nothing but annoy him. So I bided my time, smelled the flowers, and pretended interest in the gossip of the court. After a quarter hour, there was a characteristic pause in the conversation. Next, we would engage in an argument. After that, we could go somewhere private enough to speak of important matters.
"I have always thought,"
Alvaron said at last, introducing the topic of our discussion. "That everyone has a question that rests in the center of who they are." "How do you mean, Your Grace?" "I believe everyone has some question that drives them, a question that keeps them awake nights, a question they worry like a dog with an old bone. If you understand a man's question, it brings you closer to understanding the man himself." He looked sideways at me, half smiling. "Or so I have always believed." I thought on it for a moment. "I would have to agree with you, Your Grace." Alvaron raised an eyebrow at this. "As easy as that?" He sounded slightly disappointed. "I was expecting a bit of a struggle from you." I shook my head, glad for the easy opportunity to introduce a topic of my own. "I've been worrying at a question for some years now, and I expect I will worry it some few years more. So what you say makes a perfect sense to me."
"Really?"
he said hungrily.
"What is it?"
I considered telling him the truth, about my search for the Chandrian and the death of my troop, but there was no real chance of that. The secret still sat in my heart, heavy as a great smooth stone. It was too personal a thing to tell someone as clever as the mayor. What's more, it would reveal my Edema Rue blood, something I had not made public knowledge in the mayor's court. The mayor knew I wasn't nobility, but he didn't know my blood was quite so low as that.
"It must be a heavy question for you to take so long in weighing it," Alvaron joked as I hesitated.
"Come, I insist. In fact, I will offer you a trade. A question for a question. Mayhap we will help each other to an answer." I could hardly hope for better encouragement than that. I thought for a moment, choosing my words carefully.
"Where are the Aemir?"
"The bloody-handed Aemir," Alvaron mused softly to himself. He glanced sideways at me.
"I assume you're not asking where their bodies are bestowed."
"No, Your Grace," I said somberly. His face turned thoughtful.
"Interesting."
I drew a relieved breath. I had half expected him to give a flip response, to tell me the Aemir were centuries dead. Instead, he said,
"I studied the Aemir a great deal when I was younger, you know."
"Truly, Your Grace?" I said, surprised by my own good luck. He looked at me, a ghost of a smile touching his lips.
"Not that surprising. I wanted to be one of the Aemir when I was a boy."
He looked ever so slightly embarrassed.
"Not all the stories are dark, you know. They did important things. They made hard choices that no one else was willing to. That sort of thing frightens people, but I believe they were a great force for good."
"I've always thought so, too," I admitted.
"Out of curiosity, which was your favorite story?"
"Etrayon," Alvaron said a little wistfully.
"I haven't thought of that in years."
"I could probably recite the 8 oaths of Etrayon from memory." He shook his head and glanced in my direction.
"And you?"
"Etrayon is a bit bloody for me," I admitted. Alvaron looked amused.
"They weren't called the bloody-handed Aemir for nothing," he said. "The tattoos of the Ciridae were hardly decorative."
"True," I admitted. "Still, I prefer Sir Savian."
"Of course," he said, nodding. "You're a romantic."
We walked in silence for a moment, turning a corner and strolling past a fountain. "I was enamored with them as a child," Alvaron said at last, as if confessing something slightly embarrassing. "Men and women with all the power of the church behind them. And that was at a time when all the power of Aetur stood behind the church." He smiled. "Brave, fierce, and answerable to no one save themselves and God."
"And other Aemir," I added.
"And ultimately the Pontifex," he finished.
"I assume you've read his proclamation declaiming them?"
"Yes." We came to a small arching bridge of wood and stone, then stopped at the top of the arch and looked out over the water, watching the swans maneuver slowly on the current.
"Do you know what I found when I was younger?" the mayor asked.
I shook my head.
Once I'd grown too old for children's stories of the Aemir, I started wondering more specific things. How many Aemir were there? How many were gentry? How many horse could they put to field for an armed action? He turned slightly to gauge my reaction. I was in Felton at the time. They have an old Aeturan mendery where they keep church records for the whole of the Northern Ferrol. I looked through their books for 2 days. Do you know what I found? Nothing, I said. You didn't find anything. Alvaron turned to look at me. His expression held a carefully controlled surprise. I found the same thing at the university, I said. It seemed as if someone had removed information about the Aemir from the archives there. Not everything, of course, but there were scarce few solid details. I could see the mayor's own conclusions sparking to life behind his clever gray eyes. And who would do such a thing? He prompted. Who would have better reason than the Aemir themselves? I said, which means they are still around, somewhere. Thus your question. Alvaron started walking again, slower than before. Where are the Aemir? We left the stone bridge and began to walk the path around the pond, the mayor's face full of serious thought. Would you believe I had the same thought after searching in the mendery? He asked me. I thought the Aemir might have avoided being brought to trial, gone into hiding. I thought there might even be Aemir in the world after all this while, acting in secret for the greater good. I could feel the excitement bubbling in my chest. What did you discover? I asked eagerly. Discover? Alvaron looked surprised. Nothing. My father died that year and I became mayor. I dismissed it as a boyish fancy. He looked out over the water and the gently gliding swans. But if you found this same thing half a world away, he trailed off, and I drew the same conclusion, Your Grace. Alvaron nodded slowly. It is disturbing that there might be a secret this important. He looked around the garden, at the walls of his estate. And in my own lands. I don't like that. He turned back to me, his eyes sharp and clear. How do you propose to search them out? I smiled ruefully. As Your Grace pointed out, no matter how well-spoken or well-educated I am, I will never be nobility. I lack the connections and the resources to research this as thoroughly as I would like, but with your name to open doors, I could make a search of many private libraries. I could access archives and records too private or too hidden to be pruned. Alvaron nodded, his eyes not leaving mine. I think I understand you. I, for one, would give a great deal to know the truth of this matter. He looked away as the sound of laughter drifted upward, mixing with the footsteps of a group of approaching nobles. You've given me a great deal to think about, he said in softer tones. We will discuss this further in more privacy. What time would be convenient for you to meet, Your Grace? Alvaron gave me a long, speculative look. Come to my rooms this evening, and since I cannot give you an answer, let me offer you a question of my own instead. I value questions near as much, Your Grace.